Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat.
Welcome, everybody, to the Fantasy Baseball Beat. I'm Mike Carter. I'm going to be your host for the night, for better or for worse, likely for worse. I'm here with my good friend and co-host as well, Dave Funnel. Dave, we'll get you to you in a second. Torres is out tonight because he is doing family things. It is right before the 4th of July weekend. Happy 4th of July weekend to those of you who celebrate it. Although in the United States, we have a mixed bag right now with this big, beautiful bill getting passed today in the Senate and the House. So we've got some interesting things going on here in the States. Dave is a casual observer north of the border and laughing at me right now as I speak. We were scheduled to have Jake Rill with us tonight to talk Baltimore Orioles, but Jake had some commitments that came up and he was not able to join us. So you are going to have me and Dave talking to you tonight, and we are going to talk about a few different things. Starting off, we're going to talk about some difficult decisions that we have to make for our fantasy rosters as we head into the hot part of July here. We're also going to do a beat writer roundup on a couple of articles that we've found interesting this week. One from Brian McTaggart on the Astros, another one from Adam Berry on the Rays. And we're going to talk about injuries and bullpens, which are what Dave and I write about over at Fantrax and over at Rotoballer on a weekly basis. Dave writes on a daily basis in some places. But I'm going to introduce Dave here. Dave, happy 3rd of July. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. It's first week of summer vacation for me because I'm a teacher here in Canada. And this week's been all about just getting the kids' routine down and, keeping them busy. So
we got out of school the last week of May. So you've actually been in school another 5 weeks past when I was in school. But I work year-round, as you know. So our summer session is actually 3 weeks in already, and you're just getting ready to start your summer break. So kudos to you. I'm glad that you're there. I don't know how you do what you do every day. For those of you who don't know, Dave teaches kindergarten. I think he's got a special place in heaven for himself once he passes from the planet into nothingness. Dave, thank you for all that you do with that stuff. Dave, I want to start off with a question for you. What's one really difficult decision that you're trying to make right now in terms of your fantasy rosters and looking at players? You know, we kind of get into this mindset now where we're right before the All-Star break and we're at the mythical kind of halfway point of the season, and we kind of know what our teams are at this point. What's one difficult decision that you're facing to share with our audience tonight?
For me, in my home league, I'm in third, and it's within reach, but it's a dynasty league as well. So my decision right now, I'm trying to decide if I want to upgrade at first base. Mm-hmm. So right now, these are all the eligible players, and thank goodness we play on Yahoo because everyone's eligible. I've got Cody Bellinger, Wilson Contreras, Salvador Perez, Brandon Lau, Jonathan Aranda, and Jake Berger. So they all have they all have first base eligibility, but they all play somewhere else as well. And I'm using them elsewhere, and you know, with the right matchup, I'm putting the right guy in at first base. So they're all steady, they're all pretty good, but none of them consistently could single-handedly make a good day great. Mm-hmm. So you think I should? I'm going to ask you. Do you think I should upgrade at first base? I mean, there's one owner that's offered me Vlad, but it's going to cost me. And another owner put Freddie Freeman on the block.
Ooh.
And he's expiring after this year. So I couldn't even tell you what the cost would be there. So should I go for one big first baseman or keep what I have and play the right matchups?
Vlad would be a big bopper, and you would have to just set it and forget it. You wouldn't have to worry about it anymore. I'm not sure. As much as I love Freddie Freeman as a regular baseball player, I don't know that fantasy-wise if he's that huge of an upgrade over what you have on an expiring contract. You know, you've gotten some good mileage out of the players that you have there, and you're mixing and matching really well. But you also have to have some concerns too, right? I mean, with Ha-Seong Kim coming back in Tampa, does Low lose playing time? Contreras with the injury situation and what he's kind of facing right now, does that end up rearing its ugly head later on? with the weather getting hotter, does that end up hurting Aranda, who's playing half of his games in Florida where it's really hotter than Hades right now? Berger, do you trust? You know, I think it depends for me and in your situation. I think it depends on what you have to give up for Vlad. And the other thing that you have to counter with that is that Vlad is sort of your hometown guy, right? I mean, you see Vlad play on a daily basis. Does that jade you in some way into thinking that he's better than what he really is? Or is he such an upgrade for you that it doesn't matter to you what you have to do? Hypothetically, Dave, what would you have to give up in trade?
So if it was for Vlad, I would have to give up Christopher Sanchez and Wilson Contreras, which I'm okay giving up Contreras, even though it's a good contract. But for starting pitching, I really need pitching. So right now, the timing just isn't right. But with Freddie Freeman, I'm not sure. There's the one owner that's he's out of it and he's selling for next year. But like you said, I'm not sure how I feel about Freeman. I had some concerns coming in and he's just getting older.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that that's a really interesting point to think about. There is what, you know, what you'd have to give up in either one of those deals. And I certainly wouldn't want to give up Sanchez right now with the way he's been going. He has looked like an ace, as if Philadelphia needed another starting pitcher at this point, but they do, right? So he's been outstanding. That's somebody to kind of really take a look at. But I don't think that your options that you have there are bad. I mean, I think you've really built a sort of Frankenstein, if you will, of players there. And I love Aranda. I mean, you had been talking about him going back 6 months, and I took a chance on him in a couple places based on your recommendation, and he's been a godsend for me in a couple of leagues.
Yeah, he's been amazing. And I think right now, given what I have, I'm going to try and keep mixing and matching. And I kind of like Cody Bellinger in Yankee Stadium. And I know I bet on him coming into the season, and he hasn't really hit for power, but I still think there's another level he can take it to.
And I'm going to say something too, Dave, on a personal level, because you and I have been friends for a long time and have traded text messages for years before we were even on the podcast together. I think there's a certain joy that you take and a passion that you take from Frankenstein in these types of situations. And I think that that's a really cool thing about how you play fantasy baseball, is that where other people would look at something and see a problem and say, oh, I'm just going to go ahead and get Freddie Freeman no matter what I have to give up to have him and plug him in there, you've created a situation where you can get by with what you have for a long period of time because of the fact that you value depth and you really look at these guys deeply. And so I think kudos to you on that, for really building a great roster with that kind of flexibility.
Well, thanks. I just, it usually just comes within the draft. First of all, I love multi-position eligibility. That's my favorite, what I call a cheat code in fantasy. It's just, you can just plug and play, especially in daily leagues. Mm-hmm. But even in a draft, for me, I just look at the values of the players. And even if I end up with two third basemen, I'll just put one as my corner and I'll just look for the value somewhere else. To plug and play in at different positions. So
for sure,
that's how I look at it.
I think that that's really great. For me, I have a situation that I'm really stuck on. And as I said off air, I've got about three that are really pressing, where ones that I am kind of, I don't want to say that I'm losing sleep over fantasy baseball, because that would just be ridiculous, but it's caused me to really take pause. And my situation is that in TGFBI, in which I'm currently waffling somewhere between 11th and 13th, which is brutal, I drafted Zach Gallen and Dylan Cease. And while a lot of the pundits and the different shows that I've been listening to are talking about dropping Zach Gallen, I can't bring myself to quite do that. So my question to you, Dave, is do I ride it out with those guys and hope for better performance? Now, last night I had Gallen on the bench, and what does he do? Strike out 10. Look outstanding. Of course, because it's me. Because it was me. That's why. Because I made a decision to not play him, and all of a sudden he's lights out, right? But do I ride it out with those guys? If I don't ride it out with those guys, how do I replace them? It feels like every starting pitcher is hurt. What are your thoughts on my situation?
Well, of the two guys, for sure I would keep Cease. I would ride it out with him. I like, first of all, he's got the strikeouts going for you. So at the very least, even if the ERA is up there, he just may be a high ERA, high whip guy, but he'll have the strikeouts going for him. I mean, he's at what, 29 a season or 29% on the season. So you're going to be good with him there. Chances are, though, if you've already put up with Cease and Gallen for this long, your ERA and WHIP aren't really where they should be or where you
they are not. They are not. I can say that with definite certainty.
And those are the two stats for pitching that are really hard to gain ground on, because the larger the sample size, the smaller the difference, you know, with every out or every safe batter. By now, it might even be, I don't want to say too late to make ground, but it's going to be incredibly difficult. And the one, I don't know what it is about Zach Gallen, but he's been getting worse every single year. Even just look at Savant and the sliders from year to year. They go from beautiful shade of red to this desolate blue. And, you know, the ERA has gone up every year. The WHIP's gone up every year. It might be time to give up on him. Mm-hmm. And it's hard though in TGFBI, because you can't really play the streaming game, because it's going to cost you money every week to play that game. Now you could play it, you know, 2 weeks in advance and try and do it that way to get for cheaper. But as hard as it is to say, is he your second best pitcher?
Yeah, well, the thing was, if you recall, that what I had done was I had built that team, the pitching around Garrett Cole, Dylan Cease, right, and Zach Gallen. strike two for me, I guess, right? So, it was really – and then when you lose somebody like Cole, you just know, like, unless you're going to commit an inordinate amount of fab to one of these guys that comes up, and even then it's a crapshoot. I mean, look at Mizorowski the other night. He was awful, you know? So – like you just don't know. I mean, and so you kind of lay the best laid plans and then kind of figure it. I think one of my biggest flaws as a fantasy player is that I tend to stick too long with guys that have proven track records and miss out on guys that could actually really help me. To your point, I wanted to comment on this. My team ERA in TGFBI is a woeful 4.13. My I wish everybody could see the look on your face right now, Dave, when you just did that. Dave is not a histrionic type person like I am, and he just went, "Oof."
I usually have a poker face. I swear to you, I have a poker face, but that was not it.
Yeah, so I've given up the idea that I can control my ERA. My WHIP is actually middle of the pack at 1.27, so it's not too bad. But now I'm facing strategy. I got to figure out what I'm going to do there, and I've added some guys that might be able to help me there, you know, in the TGFBI league itself, looking at the pitching wise, over the course of the last couple of weeks, I've added Colton Gordon. I added Grant Taylor trying to help me control my ratios, and then he got exploded last night, you know. So I've also got Spencer Arrighetti on my bench, as well, hoping for him to come back soon, and we'll go from there. But it is not looking good, folks, in TGFBI for old Mike Carter this year. So,
well, the one thing I will say, I think he gets the Royals and the Angels next week, and then after that, he may get the Cardinals and then at the Pirates. I'm just looking at the Diamondbacks schedule.
That could be okay.
That's not a bad four game set to really see if he can build upon his last game.
Do you think that he might be a guy that with a change of scenery could be different or better too? I mean, he's been in Arizona for a while, and with them kind of treading water right now with all the injuries they've had, could he be somebody that's a trade candidate? Do you think that a change of scenery might help him at all?
Yeah, you know what? Maybe it's something like whatever the team is telling him to do to fix his problems isn't working, and maybe someone new will be able to tap into it.
Good point. Well, Dave, thanks for the feedback and the support. I'm going to probably have to stick it out with what I have there, and so hopefully things can get better. I want to shift gears here a little bit and go to our beat writer roundup. And Dave, you found two really good articles this week that we wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about for our audience. And the first one was by Brian McTaggart, and it was titled "Astros Keep Winning Despite Injuries to Jeremy Peña and Yordan Alvarez," who is like your guy. every time he gets hurt, something happens to him. I always think of you. Clean thoughts only, honestly. But tell us a little bit about what that article was about, Dave, and a little bit about the injury to Pena. Pena has really been a pleasant surprise for a lot of fantasy players this year. I was very high on him coming into the season, as you know, and had him in a number of places. But talk a little bit about the main points of the article and a little bit about Pena's fractured rib and Jordan Alvarez's hand issue.
Yeah, so this was by Brian McTaggart at MLB.com. Does great work there. And it was basically to talk about how the Astros continue to win despite all of these injuries. And in they highlighted two of the main ones. So first was Jeremy Pena. First, it highlighted that he had a swing change in a new batting stance that he worked on in the offseason. So he's been arguably their best player all year. But he took a pitch to the ribs, and a few days later, he was placed on the IL. Now, they got some imaging done, and that's when they noticed the fracture, and they talked about how it's if he could come back by the All-Star break. Not that they're hope that, you know, that they think that he will, but there's a chance that he might. So it's not looking too optimal right now. And then they also talked about the Jordan Alvarez injury. Now, this was done before today's information, but it was revealed today. So I'm just going to add, this wasn't in the article, but that the renewed soreness is, it's from the inflammation happening, and it's not necessarily just the fracture. So it's not because the fracture is causing it anymore. And they consider that to be good news, but there is no timetable right now for a return for him. This could really be extended, but I don't think surgery yet is on the table. I think what's important, which is something that Houston is not good at doing, is just waiting it out and, you know, starting up again, ramping up again at the right time. This is a team that's gone through so many setbacks over the last couple of years. We've seen it with Kyle Tucker. We've seen it with Jordan Alvarez. Some of their injured pitchers right now, like Luis Garcia, he had setbacks. So this is something that they need to work on. However, this article brought light to the fact that, A, they have the third best record in baseball. They're 32-14 at home. And now I know they lost today, but they're 52-35. That's pretty damn good right now. They do have some pitchers coming back. They've got Christian Javier. They've got Luis Garcia. They've got JP France and Spencer Arrighetti. So there is light at the end of the tunnel. But when you look at their lineup, I don't know if you know, like, I don't know how they're doing it offensively. They've got Isak Paredes. He's been great. Cam Smith. He's been great. And even Jake Myers was going into today, 302 with 14 stolen bases. But how are they doing this offensively? Jose Altuve hasn't been as great as he could have been. Christian Walker's been mediocre at best. Yainer Diaz hasn't been that great. Are you seeing anything offensively there, or is it just an example of like timely hitting?
Well, I think when you look at the Astros, the one thing that they know how to do, no matter who's in charge there, whether it's Dusty Baker, or whether it's Joe Espada, these guys know how to win baseball games, you know? And to your point, you know, they're doing all kinds of different things, mixing and matching their lineup. They've been leading off with Paredes. They've had Myers batting second. Cam Smith really looks the part now. You know, they've moved him up to cleanup in the order. He's a really impressive kid. You know, he's 22 years old, and the Cubs traded him. Sorry, Sarah Sanchez, my favorite Cubs fan. And they've been getting contributions from unexpected sources. Cooper Hummel comes up and all of a sudden is making contributions. Victor Caratini is catching and DHing and hitting the snot out of the ball. I just think that they're a team that's built on an organizational structure of being able to understand, like, hey, we're going to get a guy on, we're going to get him over, we're going to get him in. You know, they're not waiting around for home runs because they don't have a lineup right now that's producing a lot of those things. But the thing that they really do well, they pitch really well. Yeah. Houston always finds guys that can throw, and they don't ever spend money on guys. I mean, Lance McCullers notwithstanding, their current rotation right now is Framber, who's amazing, Colton Gordon, who's looked good in stretches, Hunter Brown, Brandon Walter, and Lance McCullers. The thing that separates them, I think, really, Dave, is their bullpen is just absolutely lights out. Yeah. I mean, if you get to the sixth inning in the Astros game and you're winning, you're going to get Brian King, you're going to get Brian Abreu, good luck, and then you're going to get Hader, who has been absolutely incredible. Josh Hader has 24 saves already. It's the first week of July. So I think that that's how they do it. They're doing it with pitching and defense, timely hitting. They're not hitting a lot of home runs, but it's a really interesting squad. And you and I and Chris had been talking quite a bit about Cam Smith this week because I was trying to pry him in a trade that I was trying to do in Tout Wars with someone who I won't name. I don't know if they want me to name them or not. So I was trying to work a trade with them. They want one of my closers. I've got three closers, Devin Williams, David Bednar, and Shelby Miller. And they were trying to pry one of those guys from me. And I was asking for Cam Smith, and they thought that that was too rich of a deal. And I don't blame them. I mean, I don't know that I'd want to trade Cam Smith right now either, but I'm so starved for offense and tout that I was trying to do that and make that work. But the Astros really do have an interesting team there. They always have an interesting team. They always figure out ways to do that. And in a really odd AL West, right? You know, with Seattle, Texas is kind of treading water. You know, Los Angeles has actually been 500, but you know, I don't see them kind of sticking around in it. But no. Yeah, that division seems ripe for Houston's taking. Great stuff there, Dave. Thanks for pointing that out and reading that, getting through that article and reading it and letting us know what the key points were. The other article that we had was with the Tampa Bay Rays. It was written by Adam Berry. And it was his mailbag questions that he had for the week. And I know a lot of people are interested in some of the Rays' pitching situation, namely Shane McClanahan. He did throw a full intensity BP on Tuesday. I'm not 100% sure what that means, but it sounds good. It sounds like it's better than him just sitting there doing nothing. He's coming back from a nerve issue. He did see a nerve specialist. And they're taking it slowly with him and proceeding with caution. Everything seems okay so far, but there's no timetable. And that's the thing that always kind of ends up driving you nuts with these things is, you know, Dave is our injury expert, and he talks all the time about that. You know, guys playing catch out to 120 feet, and then they progress to throwing off of a mound, and then they take 2 days and see how they feel, and then they go back and do a simulated game or whatever it might be. All of these steps that happen when guys are going through rehab. McClanahan has a lot to have to work up to here. He didn't pitch at all last year, and he's also coming back from major surgery on top of this nerve issue. So we're kind of looking at that, and it seems like August seems like a reasonable guess for him to come back, but God only knows what it is that we're going to get from McClanahan when he comes back. The other guy that they have there is Rasmussen. And he's been really good for them this year. He's actually been a really good pitcher. If you've ever had a chance to kind of sit there and watch him pitch, you know, you're seeing a guy that really has a mastery of pitching, in my opinion, when you look at him. I've seen him a couple of times on the MLB Network. I'm lucky to be able to have the MLB TV. But Drew Rasmussen has actually probably been their best starter without question this year. And definitely a guy that they need to have moving forward if they want to continue to compete in a very, very tough American League East. The team is being very intentional with his usage, Adam wrote in the article. After five-ish innings, most of the time he's getting pulled. So he's not someone that's going to go deep into games, but he's going to give you five mostly worry-free innings, I would argue. The important part for him, for us to realize, is he's probably going to be capped about 150 innings, and he's already at 87 innings right now. So if you have him, know that you're only going to get maybe another 70 to 80 innings out of him, and maybe you look to move him while that's a high trade value for him right now, you know, speculating that maybe other people in your league might not know that he's getting shut down at 150. So that was really essentially Adam's article was talking about McClanahan and Rasmussen and those types of guys there. And Tampa is in the thick of it, as they always are. It seems like, you know, they're 48-39 right now. They're a half game back in the standings behind the Yankees and the Blue Jays, who are statistically tied for first place right now. As interesting as the Blue Jays are, Dave, as a matter of fact, totally off show record here, I'm going to see Toronto play the White Sox on Monday. It's my first White Sox game in almost 2 years.
Oh, nice. That'll be fun.
I'll be sure to send you some video and some snippets of what I'm doing there. So anyway, so we're going to shift gears from our beat writer roundup. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more of the Fantasy Baseball Beat here on the Pitcher List Network of Podcasts. Okay, we're back. It's Mike here. If you're listening for the dulcet tones of Chris Torres, he's on vacation, so you get me. I'm really sorry about that. It is what it is. You're going to have to live with it. Or just turn it off at this point. That's fine, too. Dave, we have you here. We got to talk about injuries. We got to really kind of focus on some of this stuff. I have a little bit of a twist on it, though, for you.
Okay.
Which teams that were built to win this year might turn into sellers at the deadline thanks to injuries?
All right.
Heavy sigh. Yeah. I hear you.
How much time do we have? when I think about that, there's a few teams that come to mind. The first one that came to mind is Baltimore. The Baltimore Orioles came into this season with, you know, the sky's the limit, and right now they're 37-49, last place in their division. Here's their current rotation. Okay.
Oh, don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah. If anyone out there eating, put your food down, because this is not going to be good. Dean Kramer, Trevor Rogers, Sagano, Charlie Morton, and what's his first name? Young. Is it Brandon Young? Brandon Young. So that's their starting five right now. Charlie Morton has elbow tendonitis, so he got pushed back. There's a report going out that Sagano may have been figured out based off his last outing. So teams might be scouting that. Mm-hmm. This is not a good lineup right now. Gary Sanchez is their starting catcher, and he got injured with a finger injury. So we could be seeing Jacob Stallings and Pedro Severino as their starting catcher. Adley Rutschman gone to the All-Star break. Ryan Mountcastle, at least August, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
Grayson Rodriguez, who the hell knows? And Zach Eflin. I think it was a phantom injury, but he apparently has a back injury. So looking at that, if you were the Orioles, would you not try and sell?
Oh, yeah. I think that there's definitely some pieces there that they should sell. And as a side note on this, one thing that I'm really, really irritated with, and I think probably a lot of other people are too, is Jordan Westberg getting hurt every other day. I mean,
yeah,
I had such high hopes for him this year, and I'm this close to just cutting ties. I don't know how much longer I can wait on him to be back and be healthy. And it sounds like the injury that he has is going to be nagging and not go away. So he's probably going to drop like a stone hitting wise. Right. So no, I think they definitely have some pieces to move here, Dave. I mean, Ryan O'Hearn would be a piece that I think could get moved. Cedric Mullins makes a lot of sense to be moved. Sanchez has been fantastic. He's hitting home runs and knocking in runs at a blistering pace against both lefties and righties, which is surprising. And to your point, they did call Jacob Stallings up after they just signed him off the scrap heap last week. But Luis Severino, I mean, if you're the Orioles, where is Samuel Basalo? Like, why are they not calling him up in this situation?
And they're so stubborn with these call-ups. They refuse to call them up when they should be called. They have this perceived timeline of what it should be, but they're missing out. They missed out last year, and they're missing out this year.
How bad is Colby Mayo at third base if they're not playing him at third base? I mean, so they have him on the bench, and he's playing first base or DHing, but they're using Ramon Urias at third base because Westberg is unable to play third base at this time. Like, it's a nightmare scenario. I don't think anybody in Baltimore anticipated that happening. And you hit the nail right on the head in talking about their pitching. I mean, I don't think anybody saw that coming from where it's been. Charlie Morton's been great, you know, in the last month, but he's also almost 42. You got to wonder what you're going to get out of him. Definitely could be a trade candidate there. I'm kind of interested to see if they would trade Felix Bautista. I think he's got another. I think he's got another year of control, relatively cheaply, and he's been really good for the most part this year. So that's somebody that I think a pitching a bullpen starved team. Hint, hint, Chicago Cubs might be looking at and trying to add somebody like that as a rental. But well, you're right.
They've got Sir Anthony Dominguez and Gregory Soto. They're both free agents after this year.
Yes.
You think either of them?
Yeah. Those guys, to close? Those guys have value. I don't know if they would get traded to close. I mean, neither one of them have closed much in the last, I guess, well, when Bautista was down, Dominguez had some opportunities there, but he also ran out of gas pretty quickly too, if you recall. I don't know. I mean, I think that those guys are guys that could go to another team and help out the back end of a bullpen, but I don't know that they're closers. I think really what you see in Baltimore is a retooling, not a restructure. I mean, they still have a lot of young talent. And quite honestly, one of the guys that I've been really, really happy with this year was Jackson Holliday. A lot of people felt like he was risky going into the season, but he's played really, really well. Gunner's a little bit down, but they all are, you know. So I think you kind of chalk it up to, you know, having – pitching injuries kind of, you know, raid them a little bit. I mean, Eflin, if he gets healthy, could be somebody that they move to. I'm a little interested to see if Grayson comes back and also Kyle Bradish, if he's able to come back at all this year. I know that he had surgery last June, so that would be an aggressive time frame for him to come back, but he was actually pitching pretty well when he got hurt last year. So, yeah, I think Baltimore is a team that definitely could move some pieces. Dave, I'm going to shift you over a little bit and ask you about one of my favorite teams, the Arizona Diamondbacks. You know, they're treading water right now with some serious injury problems that they've had. They're 43-43. What do you see them doing?
Yeah, it's I think right now, somehow, some way, they're still winning. I mean, they're at 500 right now, despite it's been a disaster with injuries. They lost Corbin Burnes. They lost AJ Puck, Martinez. And right now, Corbin Carroll and Gabriel Moreno are both out. And they won't be back till around the All-Star break. So if they could tread water by then, they might not be sellers. But I almost think they should be. Like right now, their current rotation is Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly, Brandon Pfaadt, Eduardo Rodriguez, and Ryan Nelson. I don't know who of those you trust going forward, considering their ages, their injury histories, and their contract situations.
Right.
I know Zach Gallen's a free agent after this year, so he might be a prime trade candidate. And I also know that Shelby Miller is a free agent. Do you think maybe they try and trade him?
Yeah, I think Miller would be a prime trade candidate here. He's found new life in the bullpen, and I'm really happy to see that. This is a guy that's battled injuries for so much of his career, and for him to be able to be in that spot, you know, he was getting consideration for saves anyway, even before Justin Martinez and AJ Puck went down within a week of each other with matching Tommy John surgeries, different elbows, obviously. But Shelby Miller definitely is somebody that could help a team. I do kind of think that if he gets moved, he doesn't go to a place and close, but gets added to the back end of a bullpen as part of a three-headed monster, if you will, somewhere. You know, I could see a team like the Yankees making a move like that if they have Weaver and Williams at the back end and they want to add a third guy there. Fernando Cruz is hurt right now, and I don't know when he's going to make it back, but that's a team right there that could look to add some bullpen depth. And quite honestly, if you really look at it deeply, as we do, what team couldn't use more bullpen depth? I mean, just about every team that's contending could use somebody like that. But I'm worried about Carroll. You know, I have him in a couple of places, and I want him to get back because he's been outstanding this year. But they're making do with Alec Thomas and Jake McCarthy and guys like that making, you know, meaningful contributions. So maybe if they can tread water, they can stay in. But you got to remember, too, they're also in a division with the Dodgers and the Padres, who could also, you know, make a run. And you know that the Padres will be all in, it looks like, at this point anyway. So I don't know if the wise move for Mike Hayes in there, as you pointed out, would probably be to sell off some of these pieces. Okay, here's another team, Dave, that we look at and we say, before the season, this team is stacked. This team is loaded. They're going to be really good. And that's Atlanta. And Atlanta right now is stumbling at 39-46. Granted, they've had some absolute horrific injury luck. What do you think they're doing? I mean, their current rotation is something to look at too, right?
Yeah, I think they should sell. I don't know if they will sell, given the fact that they've signed these players for long terms. Now, given that, you know, they'll have them for a while, I still think they want to show that they can compete with these players. Mm-hmm. You asked about the rotation. It's Spencer Strider coming back from his injury. Grant Holmes. We got Bryce Elder, Fuentes, and TBD. So they've lost a lot. Like Ronaldo Lopez, Chris Sale, Schwellenbach, and AJ Smith. Like that's those four right there. You could put those four on, I would say, half the league, and they would be the starters. That's brutal. Offensively, I know Marcell Ozuna, he advertised that he had a tear in his hip. So that might really hurt his value in a trade, because he struggled ever since he announced that. He has not been hitting well. Michael Harris can't hit. Ozzie Albies, I don't even know what's going on with him. He's actually healthy this year, and he's struggling.
Mm-hmm.
So I do know that Raisel Iglesias is a free agent after this year. So he might be, even if they're trying to contend or not, he might be one that they can get some value for in a trade. If they decide to sell and go all out, do you think they could trade Chris Sale?
Well, that would be interesting to think about. I think that they want to keep Sale. I think that the Braves are kind of in a similar boat to what Arizona is, in that they've got some really good young talent that's hurt. And some of them are underperforming, as you pointed out. I mean, especially Harris and Albies, really kind of surprising to a lot of people. Although I can say I don't think I was ever a really big fan of either one. I always felt like Harris was kind of outperforming what his metrics kind of showed us what he should be. I definitely think that Sale could be available in the right deal, but I think that they really like him and want to keep him and kind of view him as the anchor of that rotation, which could rebound quickly next year, right? With a healthy Schwellenbach, a healthy Strider. You know, Fuentes has looked a little overmatched so far, but he's got good stuff and he's only 20, you know, so they've got definitely some pieces there that they could do a retooling as well. But, I think Iglesias is as good as gone. And I think he's, a type of guy that is a proven commodity when it comes to, you know, playoff baseball and being a winner. He's 35 years old. His peripherals look a little bit worse than what you would want them to. But there's also some reasons to be optimistic there. You know, his FIP and his xERA are both way lower than what his actual ERA is. His xFIP is 3.54, you know, and his current ERA is 5.28, which is actually down from what it was. Strikeout rate has sort of normalized for him a little bit. He's never been a huge strikeout guy the last 3 or 4 years, but definitely is someone that I think could help the right team.
The
Cubs would be a great fit for him. I'm not sold on Palencia being the guy long term. I know right now he is, and he's been very good, but they're definitely in it, and they're definitely going to be looking to upgrade the back end of that bullpen. Iglesias would be that would fit for them. Cast with a lot of experience, not as good as what they have with Palencia.
Yeah.
But yes, Atlanta is kind of an interesting squad. And I got one more for you. This is an interesting one, I think. Kansas City. You know, I expected them to be better than what they have been so far this year, but they're kind of limping along at 40 and 47 right now. Their current rotation is Lugo, Bubic, Waka, Lorenzen, and Cameron. Not bad. But they've got some pieces there that they might actually be able to move to in trades in an attempt to retool. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. I think, well, their biggest problem, I think, is their offense. And I think it starts with their outfield. Like, you look at their current outfield right now, it's Drew Waters, John Rave, and Kyle Isbell. Like, there's Yikes. Nothing out there. I saw a stat the other day. Let me load it up here. It was, okay, a 181 average and a 241 OBP. That's all of the Kansas City Royals right fielders this year. A 186 average and a 244 OBP. That's Tom Glavine in his MLB career as a hitter.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's how bad they've been. Codify Baseball, by the way. They're the ones who came up with that.
Wow.
So it's been awful. Now, they've lost Cole Reagans for who knows how long. But if they are going to sell, they do have a bullpen that's loaded. And I know we had a question last week or a comment. Mm-hmm. So I can't remember who it was, but thank you to whoever it was, said we should have asked and talked about how, you know, they're loaded and they might be trading at the deadline. And I think they're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. They've got Estevez, they've got Urseg, they've got Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
I like them. And if they are going to sell, I think they should be trading a lot of these guys to try and get younger and maybe get some outfield depth.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think they have some starters who could be dealt too. I mean, Michael Waka, he's making 18 next year or 14 next year. Seth Lugo has a $15 million player option.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're going to be rebuilding. I don't know if they want to pay that much. I could see Seth Lugo maybe get dealt to Houston.
Mm-hmm. Lugo would probably be the best of that bunch for somebody to acquire, but definitely, you know, Waka and Lorenzen would be guys that could eat innings to get you to the playoffs. I think the question you have to ask would be are any of those guys that you're starting in a must win playoff series. You know, Lugo would probably be that guy, but I don't know about Waka and Lorenzen. They would be great depth pieces for you to have, but
yeah.
Lugo probably would be the most interesting of that group, although he's also coming off injury, right? So we'll have to see how that kind of plays out. I do like this bullpen, Dave. It's an interesting bullpen to look at. Estevez, it was leading the major leagues in saves there for a while, and he's also backed up there by Lucas Urseg and Daniel Lynch, the fourth, who are both really capable setup guys. The one thing that's really interesting to me about their bullpen is that they don't, despite the high levels of velocity, they don't have big strikeout guys. When we had Jaylen on last week, he talked about Stephen Cruz, and Stephen Cruz would be a guy that I think could step into a higher leverage role there if they end up making some of these moves. Also, Angel Zerpa is another young guy that's a lefty that could be somebody that could step into a greater role. I definitely expect that Lynch and Urseg could be guys that would be on the move, depending on which, you know, Estevez could be too, but he's got a lengthier contract. If Estevez were to move, Urseg would be a natural segue into that closer role. But if they move Urseg, obviously Estevez would kind of continue in that role. But they definitely have some pieces there that they could look at moving. Although I did read on Trade Rumors yesterday that they're kicking around with Pittsburgh looking at Brian Reynolds, which would be a definite outfield upgrade for them, even though he's struggled this year. Which made me wonder if maybe are they doing a retooling or are they looking at, you know, really trying to be in it? I don't know, with Detroit kind of running away with the division right now, I don't know how wise it would be to try to get involved in it this year. As we said, Kansas City's in fourth place right now, 40 and 47, 14 games back, with only a 7.5% chance to make the playoffs. So maybe what it would be for them would be that retooling, like we said, you know, getting rid of some of those high-priced pitchers and adding some outfield talent, which they sorely, sorely need. With that, we are going to take our next commercial break. We're going to come back and talk about our mental health moment. I've got questions to ask Dave about how he handles the holiday stress. We'll be right back with more Fantasy Baseball Beat in a moment. Okay, and we're back. So, Dave, I know the 1st of July is a holiday in Canada. The 4th of July is a holiday here in the States. So we both had holidays to celebrate this week, or maybe not celebrate, maybe tolerate is more of the word that we like to use for those types of holidays. But it got me to thinking a little bit about holiday breaks and how we navigate those as human beings. And it's been my experience being a special ed teacher for 30 years that my students really struggle when we have breaks. They struggle with having a lack of structure and taking care of themselves appropriately. And also, you know, knowing what's an appropriate bedtime, what's not, and all those types of things. Yeah. And what I wanted to ask you was, you know, when we have holidays and weeks like we do this week, so my schedule is interrupted tomorrow. We don't have school tomorrow because it's the 4th of July. We'll be off. How do you handle the hustle and bustle of the holidays and like the schedule changes that come invariably with spending more time with family and friends?
Well, I mean, for talking more about like Christmas and Thanksgiving and stuff like that, for me, I try and make sure that I do get some time for myself, whether it be a small amount or something significant. I do try and do that for my own mental well-being, just to ensure that I'm capable of the hustle and bustle of what's about to happen. So typically, like, I can't tell you, but for the last few years, Christmas morning, I'm up at like 4 or 5 o'clock going out for a walk or a run, just so I can get my time in for me. And I know for me, not just physically, but mentally, when I do something for myself, I feel ready to attack the day, which is kind of the reason why I get up early, you know, throughout the school year as well and go to the gym. Mm-hmm. It's just, I feel mentally ready. I've taken care of myself. Now I can take care of others.
Right. It's that old expression of take, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup, right? Like you have to be able to have something to give. You can't pour from it if it's not there.
Right. And that's kind of the hard part with holidays. It's that you're giving so much of yourself, and it's not just me, like everyone is. You're always giving and giving, and you're here and you're there, and you don't get a chance to experience, you know, the time that you have. And if you don't have anything to give, like if your cup is empty, then the time that, you know, you're at your aunt's house for dinner and then your grandma's for dessert, it's like you have nothing there, and all you're thinking about is, I wish I was home right now, or I wish I could just be doing this right now, because you haven't been able to replenish your own cup. So I find with holidays like that, I do give to myself first. I fill up that cup, as you said, and then I start distributing, you know, throughout the day.
It makes a lot of sense. You know, I think a lot of people can get behind that if they think about it. But there's also those people who say, well, I don't want to sacrifice the extra hour of sleep, Dave. Like, I need that more than I need going out and doing that on my own. But I totally agree with you. And I feel the same way.
It's doing that fills my cup. But by all means, if an extra hour of sleep fills your cup, by all means, do that. Do what fills your cup is what I'm trying to say.
Right. Right. Exactly. And for me, a lot of the time it's that I wish it was more exercise. Sometimes it's that yoga in the morning, but also then doing my writing, you know, that really kind of helps to take my mind off of the things that are going on. You know, currently I have 4 articles that I'm writing a week besides doing the podcast with you guys. So I've got enough fantasy baseball stuff to keep me busy, but that's good for me. And I need that. For me, I think the big difference around holiday time is really trying to make sure that I maintain a schedule that is fairly close to the one that I keep during the regular part of the year, right? So most nights, I'm a creature of habit. I try to be in bed by 10. I'm usually reading a book by about that time. I'm off the phone. I've put that away. I'm trying to get myself wound down by 11 at the latest to be able to fall asleep. When we have holidays like what we do tomorrow, the natural temptation is to stay up late and watch a game, maybe have an extra beer, maybe, you know, just kind of burn the midnight oil a little bit on that. I really try hard not to do that to maintain that schedule, because if I do that tomorrow or tonight, and then I do that tomorrow when it's the fourth, and we have parties to go to in the neighborhood, and I'll probably be out a little bit later than what I normally would be out of normal circumstances. I won't have enough energy when it comes back to Sunday to try to get ready for Monday and get back into my regular swing of things. So it's, for me, it's really important to keep scheduling. And the other thing that I do a lot, and people will laugh when I say this, is I make lists. I make lists of things that I need to get to when I have a little bit of time to do them, or when I'm off. And sometimes it could be as simple as, hey, remember to water the hanging plants or cut the grass or things like that to get on my list. But other times it's, hey, you know, call so-and-so and check in on so-and-so and make sure that they're doing okay. You know, like those types of things. And I put them on lists. And when I can cross something off the list, I feel like I'm really accomplished and I've really done something that's good. And I feel better about my situation. So that's how I fill my cup. Dave's talking about being able to go out and walk and be by himself and get some exercise, maybe listen to a podcast, whatever it might be, and do that. Mine is a little bit different in that I just try to maintain the same schedule, but also recognize that my social battery is probably going to get depleted when I'm out in public. It's funny because most people who meet me who don't know me very well think that I'm an extrovert. I am not an extrovert. I'm actually very introverted. I'm extroverted around people that I care about and people that I know well. If I don't know somebody very well, I'm probably not going to be super talkative with them. Every once in a while, it's funny because I'll be in the neighborhood here, I'll run into somebody, and there'll be somebody who listens to the podcast or has read one of my articles, and that offers a natural bridge to conversation, which is good, and that opens up that conversation for me. But otherwise, left to my own devices, I would probably be alone a lot. I would probably be watching TV, watching the Bear, or watching baseball by myself if left to my own devices, which is good sometimes. But I know that tomorrow, with it being a holiday, I need to flex that social muscle. I have to be able to be out with my family and be able to be social. And then Saturday, I can rest. And if my battery becomes depleted tomorrow, I know that I'll get to the end of that finish line at 10:30, 11 o'clock tomorrow night, and then I'll be able to hit that reset. And so for me, I think that's good, and that's what works for me. So we're going to, I think, leave it there. Dave, again, thanks for everything that you do, and I'm glad that you're on your break and you finally made it to that. For those of you that are listening to this on Saturday, I hope that you're having a good weekend, a restful weekend, and having a good time seeing family and friends. For Dave Funnel and the absent Chris Torres, who is on vacation this week, I'm Mike Carter. I'm signing off on the Fantasy Baseball Beat for this week, home to Pitcherless podcast as well. Make sure you're listening to those. If you're not listening to those, you should really change that and get after it. One, thank you so much for joining us this week. We'll be back next week with, I think, Scott Merkin talking White Sox baseball. Some people might think that would be a really short podcast, but there's actually a lot of White Sox stuff to be able to talk about, as Dave laughs. Thanks, all. Have a great weekend. Peace.